It is just after 11 and we're into the last hour of the show. And on this week's Wellness Wednesday, we're talking about listeriosis. So the Food Safety Authority of Ireland announced a number of recalls on products due to safety concern of listeria, a bacteria that can cause serious illness, especially in vulnerable people. A voluntary precautionary food recall of ready-to-heat meals is underway due to a link with the outbreak. Sarah Keogh, consultant dietitian and founder of Eat Well, joins me now. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So, Sarah, this has been in the news now for many weeks. How serious is listeria?
So listeria itself, if you get an infection with listeria, it can be quite serious. Now, most people, if they do get infected with it, they will have, you know, kind of the typical symptoms of food poisoning. They'll get over it and they'll be fine. But rarely someone can become seriously ill with it, as we saw with the case earlier. And particularly if someone gets listeria during pregnancy, it can cause miscarriage. So it can have problems for the baby. So for most people, it's uncomfortable, but it can be more serious.
So what kind of symptoms would people experience?
So it can take a few weeks to come on. It can be anything from sort of a bit of like a flu-like symptoms, but a lot of it is your typical, vomiting, diarrhea, that kind of sort of symptoms with it would be the main thing that people would get.
And in relation to, products being identified, how quickly does that happen? How quickly is it determined where the listeriosis has come from?
So it's actually quite quickly. And I mean, the one thing I would say at the moment is we had one case of somebody being getting very seriously ill with it, and a couple of people have been sick. But what we're seeing now is where, we've seen people actually kind of get very, very sick from getting listeriosis. What's come in the recent weeks is that they're identifying some listeria in different places. It sounds like it's this massive outbreak and it sounds like everybody needs to be totally panicked about it, but we actually don't.
Has been so many products.
Yes.
Every day, twice a day, you see different products. So yeah, I can understand why people are panicking.
And they are. But the thing about it is that a year ago, so basically what it is, anyone that's involved in producing food, any food producer will know this. They do a lot of their food safety training. They do their HACCP training. There is checks in the food premises all the time. So every so often things are found and listeria can be found. Like, listeria is very, very common. It's a really common bacteria. It comes in all kinds of food and all kinds of soil. So it does turn up. But what would have happened is a year ago, if they had had a small recall for example, spinach, there would have been a press release. People would have been notified, but it would not have been seen as a really big deal because no one was actually sick. Mm-hmm. What's happened now is it's exactly the same thing at the moment. We're having this recall. It's just that a couple of weeks ago, some people were very, very seriously ill with it. We're a little more heightened in awareness for it. So to be honest, you can actually go back and look at the Food Safety Authority and the work that they're doing in terms of bacteria and food safety and food checking. And you'll actually see, because I would get these kind of alerts from the Food Safety Authority all the time, kind of going, recall of this product for this reason, recall of this product for that reason. So it's just hitting the news now because listeria is the big thing. So I would just really love to say to people, you don't need to be on big high alert at the moment. It's not that we suddenly have listeria everywhere, but there is just a little more focus on it at the moment for sure.
And how common is, you mentioned there listeria, and I kind of done a quick search yesterday about how common listeria is, but I suppose it's the level of it this time that is huge, as you were saying. So is it more common than we all think?
So it's probably more common than people think, but not more common than any food experts have thought. Like listeria is around. It's like any other bacteria. It's just around. It's common in, can be in water. It can be in food products. Now, it's not in our tap water, so nobody needs to stop drinking that or anything. But it does come quite commonly in. So that's why the important thing with listeria is that you're cleaning your food, that you're washing your lettuce leaves. You're doing those kind of things.
And say if you buy a bag of lettuce that does say washed and ready to eat, should you wash that?
The recommendation at the moment is that we wash. Now, the washed ready to eat should be okay. It tends to be packaged in sort of a protective atmosphere and so on. But, to be super sure, it's no harm to actually wash that. And certainly if you're washing if you have to buy like a whole lettuce and you're going through it. And what you want to do is wash that under running water. So you don't put everything into a whole sink full of water and soak it. Because if there is any listeria on one leaf, it then gets spread to everything. So you're just kind of going to rinse it a little bit one by one. And your salad spinners then are great for then shaking that off afterwards. And that's the thing about it is, like, we've all been eating bags of lettuce. We've all been eating bags of spinach for decades. And we've all been fine. There's no extra level of listeria today than there would have been last year.
Yeah.
that just happened to be in this one case where there. So what it is with bacteria, you can actually, most people will tolerate a small dose of the bacteria. It's only when it actually gets to if there's a huge contamination that then people actually get sick. Yeah. So you're going to be exposed to a lot of bugs all the time. And, you know, your immune system is pretty good when it's at low levels for them. It's absolutely fine. It's only if it comes in at high level. And that's just what happened in the case of the ready meals that were recalled. But for the things like the lettuce, the spinach, all of those, this is what we call a precautionary recall, okay, where they're just really just being ultra, ultra careful with it.
And what kind of checks? We saw last week one of the companies at the centre of this started producing their product again or putting it back on the shelves. What kind of checks be carried out? Or is it just, you know, those checks that you mentioned previously, the ongoing checks like the HACCP? Is it just that they show up that there's no...
Everything is going to be really, really tested. And what you look at with food safety is they will check the premises. And, you know, with the Food Safety Authority of Ireland, with the environmental health officers, they actually do checks all the time. In fact, Ireland is actually fantastic. We have so very few actually outbreaks of food poisoning with that because we have such safety in place. So the company that's come back, I would have absolute confidence in their food because, you know, the checks will be there, and I'd say it'll probably be double the checking that it would have been before. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's really careful, and they check everything from where Listeria might be on the premises. It might be, and what you will find sometimes with the recall is where Listeria was found on the premises somewhere, but not necessarily in the food. But it's just this precaution that we just say, look, we'll just be really careful and we'll just stop with that. You've got the testing that goes on all the time with it. You have the environmental health officers checking it, and I've no doubt they'll be kind of really keeping an eye for this as well, just to make sure everybody feels reassured about these foods.
And you mentioned there that Ireland is great in the testing of products. How does that compare to other countries? You know, you go on holidays, you're unsure about what you're eating, whether you do be cautious of, you know, has this tomato or have these salad leaves been washed before you're eating them?
Well, I think what it is you look at advisories for different countries because there are different food standards. In Europe, we have the same food laws, and I think we're particularly rigorous in Ireland with them. But it's one of those things. I know if you're traveling kind of abroad, you would look at what's the advice for those countries. Sometimes you will see, drink bottled water only or things like that, that you would just take those precautions. But I think it just changes from place to place, and that you just, if you are traveling, just check those things out.
And what would your advice be to anybody in Ireland if they do suspect that they've contracted listeriosis or they've eaten a contaminated food?
So, even the advice with when the ready meals were possibly an issue was that if you felt okay, it was fine, you know, and that's kind of your baseline. If you're feeling okay, you know, if you're not sick, you're not sick. So that's fine. But if you are feeling sick, absolutely get in touch with your doctor and just ask for their advice with that.
And I suppose you mentioned there the vulnerable people. Can they take any other precautions themselves? You know, if you are pregnant, is there things that you should stay clear of just in case?
That's the thing. I mean, we see a lot of advice around pregnancy for women, particularly around unpasteurized cheese and cheese that has a white rind on it, just to avoid those during pregnancy. Now, when we say there's a slightly increase, it's a very slightly increased risk, but it is just recommended to stay away from those. And that if you are cooking something like a ready meal, they're totally safe to use, but you follow the cooking instructions until they're hot right through to the middle. I often think, you know, in Ireland, we're a bit, it's nearly done. So rather than, if it says 4 minutes on the pack, give it the 4 minutes, because that's actually properly tested and checked to make sure that that's safe. Don't half heat something, you know, don't reheat things if they've been heated already. So you're just, you know, really careful food safety precautions that we would talk about with it. And just to keep an eye on those things. And again, particularly with pregnancy, you're just washing your food, you know, washing your salad leaves, you're washing those things with it, but it's fine. You don't have to avoid those foods.
Yeah. And the Food Safety Authority reassuring consumers regarding the recent recalls with Listeria. It is important that, you know, we do follow their guidelines. Yeah. And, you know, as you mentioned, we don't have to live in fear that, you know, these tests, they are a precaution. So that is important for people to remember as well.
And there's really good information on the FSAI website, so fsai.ie. And if you even just do a search for Listeria and the FSAI, they've really detailed information on their website. And it's actually very reassuring because I think it's very easy to suddenly panic and then think, I have to stop eating salads or I have to stop eating all these foods. We really don't. We actually have an excellent food safety system here.
Yeah. Sarah Keogh, consultant dietitian and founder of Eat Well. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. So that was our chat in relation to listeriosis. And as Sarah was saying there, there is no need to panic. And a lot of products are recalled as a precautionary measure. So that is important to remember. And I suppose, yeah, just always check the Food Safety Authority of Ireland website for all details.
Highland Radio Time Checks brought to you by Airgrid, the operator and developer of Ireland's electricity grid. Airgrid, powering up communities, powering up Ireland. The time is
now 14 minutes past 11. And just a reminder that this Friday, you could be in with a chance of winning €2,500 in cash. And that is part of Highland Radio's Mega Summer Draw with €20,000 in total to be given away. So you can buy a ticket today for the Mega Summer Draw and you will have five chances to win. Every Friday from this Friday, the 15th of August to the 5th of September, we will be giving away €2,500 in cash. And that's not all. On Friday, the 5th of September, on the 9 till noon show, we will be drawing a ticket where one lucky person will win €10,000. So to buy a ticket, log on to highlandradio.com, click on the draw link and you can get one ticket for €15 or five for €50. So make sure you log on there. And you can also give us a call on 07491 25000, and we'll be glad to process that for you over the phone. I'm joined now by Barbara Ní Cathal Comhairgeoir Plan Ála Teanga from Líonra Leictreach Shannon. Apologies, Barbara, I butchered your pronunciation there, and that is, every time I have a discussion like this, I feel so ashamed that I don't have much of the Irish language, and my granny was a native Irish speaker, so she would be turning in her grave at that. So good morning anyway, Barbara.
Good morning, Michaela. And our classes are starting again in September, so you're more than welcome.
I have considered going to classes. Yeah, I would. And I suppose it's that thing that you fear you're too old to learn a language, but you're never too old.
Never.
So
never.
I might consider
it. It's good track, and it's very conversational based and very sociable. So I would genuinely encourage anybody who's interested, whether they've absolutely no Irish or they're, you know, fairly good, fairly fluent, mm-hmm. to give us a shout and to consider the classes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you never know. You might see me there. But anyway, today we're talking about the exodus of the Mara Tea and the fear that it could lead to the Gaeltacht tradition for Irish teenagers being lost. And this is something that has been huge for generations. And I suppose for yourself, it is a severe fear.
It is, absolutely. I mean, I look at, you know, where I have come from. Like, I grew up in Strabane. I wasn't able to start learning Irish until I went to secondary school. And the reason why I have whatever fluency I have and why I'm working in a job through Irish, you know, 5 days a week, mm-hmm. everything I do, apart from this interview, is because I went to the Gaeltacht. Like, I had a great teacher at school.
Yeah.
But it was the time I spent every summer in College Sawaharorty, run by Galen, that's where I developed my fluency. And so, yes, there'd be a massive fear that kids will lose that opportunity, mm-hmm. because it's hugely important in terms of their love for the language, in terms of their fluency and their, you know, the richness of the vocabulary and their understanding of the language, mm-hmm. but as well in terms of their social skills.
Yeah.
You know, you head off to the Gaeltacht, you meet a load of people you don't know, you're sharing rooms with people, you're having to tidy up after yourself and, you know, engage with people and get on with people, you're living with a family. The life skills that teenagers develop, mm-hmm. by going to the Gaeltacht are just phenomenal. So from every perspective, as a Gaeligore myself, as a parent myself, it's something that I think is really important and that we need to be realistic going forward as to how we make this sustainable.
Yeah, because you mentioned there, you know, you had a great teacher at school. I also, you wouldn't know, but learned Irish at school, and I did my GCSE in Irish. But, you know, when you were preparing for that kind of exam, you were learning, you know, the grammar and things that you were preparing for an exam rather than, as you said, you know, the teenagers coming to the Gaeltacht, they're using it every day. And it's that conversational Irish that will carry them through.
Absolutely. That is what really beds the language down. And it's so funny. Like, I would have gone back and worked as a kinnera. And whenever you hear kids saying after maybe a week or 10 days, I was dreaming in Irish last night. And you think, yes, now it's kicking in.
Yeah.
Now it's working. But it is, it's that confidence. I mean, we have people coming into here to us saying, you know, I learned Irish for 15 years. I don't have any confidence. I'd love to be able to speak it more. And that we find that confidence is the biggest barrier to people.
Mm.
And one of the key things that kids develop when they go to the Gaeltacht is they develop confidence because they are immersed in the language and they need to speak it to get by. You know, the classes, the games, the ceilidhs, the crack is all through Irish. And so they have to just dive in there and get on with it.
So why are we experiencing this decline in the number of Marathi?
I think there's a number of things happening here. When COVID hit, the summer college option was just gone. And so a lot of people who had been keeping students had to go out and look for other ways of making, you know, making money because they weren't going to be having students coming either from secondary schools or indeed from the universities. And so they had to go and find something else. And so whenever that time passed and the courses began again, some of those people were saying, well, actually, no, you know, I've got a job doing other things and I'm going to stick with that. There's also the reality that far more people now, and particularly, like, because it is the Marathi. Yes, there are some Ferati, but it's mostly the Marathi who are looking after the students. And far more of those are out working anyway. And a lot of those who have been working as Marathi are getting older and maybe aren't really, they don't want to take on the responsibility of teenagers anymore. And so once they go, their daughters or their daughters-in-law or their sons are not following after them saying that they'll do it as well. And I think part of the problem has been that maybe we've been a wee bit patronising about this, that it's been a grand thing for women in the Gaeltacht to do during the summer to earn a bit of money.
Kind of taken for granted.
Well, yes. And I mean, the reality is, you know, because seasonal work would always have been a big thing in the Gaeltacht. And people, you know, particularly like men would have travelled, like even say when I was in the Gaeltacht, there were still men going to Scotland for work and coming back during the summer and things like that. But mortgages aren't seasonal and electricity bills aren't seasonal and university fees for their kids aren't seasonal. So families in the Gaeltacht need to have sustainable ways of making a living. And so it's not enough to say, well, this is something you can do for the summer. And so I think there needs to be engagement with kind of that, a business model as to how we make this sustainable. Because what people are saying is, they're working outside of the home, so they're not available. Mm-hmm. The money that they're getting for keeping students is not enough.
And in terms of what they are receiving now financially, in terms of support, how far does that go in what they need to provide for the teenagers coming?
Well, in terms of the Rinn na Gaeltacht, they pay €14.50 per student per night.
Right.
And then they also get a fee from the college. Now, I'd say that varies between the colleges, okay. So I don't have a figure for that. But you're not talking a vast amount of money. Now, it has gone up. It was, up until a couple of years ago, it was €10 a night. So it has gone up. But it's not a lot of money. And as we all know, teenagers can eat you out of house and home. So there's a lot of cost involved in terms of putting three meals on the table for these teenagers every day. But as well as that, if you have a student who goes home, you know, decides on day three that they're terribly homesick and goes home, then that Banity is left with an empty bed and no money for that student for the rest of that course.
Many are depending on that then for the summer
months. So if they are depending on it, then they've lost money there. So I think financially we need to be much more realistic, as I say, about how do you make this sustainable?
And do you see the government making any headway? You know, I know there are representations and we have similar discussions at this time of year. And, you know, after, you know, the teenagers go to the Gaeltacht and, you know, they complete their stay there. But do you feel the government is listening year on year whenever different issues raise their head?
And I think we actually need the government to start, as I say, looking at this from a business perspective. And, you know, Gaeltacht economy perspective as to how you make this sustainable. You know, do they need to consider that? Because there are serious issues in the second level education system in terms of Irish, that kids are doing Irish, you know, they can do Irish for 15 years and still come out without the confidence to have a conversation. Mm. That's scandalous.
Yeah.
So maybe we do need to start looking at the option for kids in, say, maybe third year and fifth year to spend a week in the Gaeltacht. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something that should be happening all year round so yeah. that people can actually look at this and say, okay, I can effectively run a guest house, mm-hmm. which is going to be for Gaeltacht students who are coming, not just in the summer, or the college is coming maybe, you know, at Halloween and Easter, but it's going to run through the year so that I can actually plan to look after my family based on the income I get from this.
Yeah.
So maybe we need to start doing something like that, something that takes seriously that this has to be a business. It has to be sustainable for people to want to stay in it. And it can't just be about, maybe there does need to be an increase per student per head, but that's not going to be enough
yeah.
to attract new people back into this system. And they have to be people, you know, we have to be talking about families for whom the language at home is Irish, mm-hmm. so that they, all the interaction, that is what is so wonderful about staying with a family that you wouldn't get in, say, like a boarding school setup, yeah. which I know some of the colleges are looking at.
Okay.
When you're with a family, you're there, you're talking Irish, the kids are talking to Irish to each other, the kids in the family, you're surrounded by it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need. We need Gaeltacht families who really have an Héileadh mar Teangatí as their language at home to see this as an option for something that is a sustainable income.
Mm. And because there does seem to be such an increase in people interested in learning the Irish language, and I know whether you agree with NECAP or not, but they have not created a trend, but so many people, you know, with their music are interested in the Irish language. They do pick up some words from their songs, and it's as if, you know, it is becoming so popular. Do you see a demand in people wanting to learn?
Oh, absolutely. The demand for our classes has escalated. And that's right the way through, as I say, from people who have no background in Irish at all, who may have come from other countries, through people who did Irish at school but really don't have the confidence, up to people whose Irish is quite good, but they really want to develop their, as we would say, Seirbhís Teanga, so the richness of their vocabulary and their expression. Mm. So we see a massive increase in that. And, all, you know, look at any of the Gaeltacht summer schools. Mm-hmm. They have waiting lists of hundreds of students.
Well, even the figures that are here in front of me, 4,000 students attended courses in the Gaeltacht in Donegal last year. That's huge numbers.
It is massive. And then you could look at probably another couple of thousand who weren't able to get places. Mm. We have people contacting us, parents contacting us, saying, have you any idea where my child could get a place in the Gaeltacht, because they've decided they want to go and everything seems to be full. Mm. You know, so there's massive demand. So again, let's go back and look at this as a business model. How do we respond? And it's not for us in Leanra Litcher Cannon yeah. to do that, but it is something that Rinne Gaeltacht needs to look at. You know, how do we supply the teaching staff and the kind of the whole structure behind it mm-hmm. that is needed? How do we make it accessible? Because a lot of these colleges, you can be looking at the guts of €1,000. There are a lot of families who cannot do that.
Yeah.
So it's part of a wider Irish language strategy, because at the moment, the levels of fluency, as I say, coming out of secondary schools for the majority of students is appallingly bad. Mm. It's too focused on answering exam questions and, you know, particular questions for the oral.
Do you think that needs to be looked about? I know there's an exam process in place, but this is part of our heritage as well, that you want students, if they learn it at school, to carry it with them.
Absolutely. And the only way you can do that is by giving them a living experience of the language. So it has to come outside of the classroom. And, you know, that's why I'm saying maybe the idea that kids from secondary schools would go to the Gaeltacht mm-hmm. for a week, maybe that is a runner. Maybe that could be explored to try to make it doable, to try to make it, you know, accessible. Because if it's going to cost the guts of €1,000 for 3 weeks in the Gaeltacht, too many families just cannot yeah. do that. And that's, we need to look at that. But an overall strategy for the Irish language to enable it to be a language of everyday life for people. And if that's going to happen, then they have to be talking. They have to be having the crack. They have to be socialising and enjoying life to Van na Gaeilge.
Yeah. And that business model you talked about, it would take quite some time to get that in place. But what do you think could be done in the interim to help or to incentivise people?
I suppose it's always going to be that financial incentive, isn't it? It's looking at what the costs are for the Moretti, looking at what they're currently getting and how those match up. But it's also, you know, there's a lot of paperwork involved.
Okay.
So some of the Moretti are saying, you know, this is not worth the hassle. And I think I can, in my job, be absolutely drowning in paperwork. So I know the frustration of that. So I think maybe those systems need to be simplified and streamlined. And I think we just need to have proper conversations with families in the Gaeltacht that are interested in doing this. And, you know, sit down with them and ask them what will make it a viable option for them.
Definitely a lot of room for improvement there. Barbara Ní Cathal from Líonra Letrachanan, thank you so much for joining me this morning and for your insight into that. Thank you.
Jeremiah Gut Michaela.
It is the 9 till noon show and it's Michaela Clark in this morning for Grey Cues, and I'm joined in studio by Chris Ashmore, presenter of Business Matters. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Michaela.
How are you joining? I told you that I'm a disaster today. Are you enjoying the weather?
How could you not enjoy that? Great to see it.
Yeah, beautiful. And you were saying it's 25 degrees out there.
It was 25.5 in my car, so that's pretty good. Yeah,
so good. Long may it last.
Absolutely.
Anyway, it is awards season and the Blast na Héireann Awards. There's big Donegal representation this year.
Yes, now these Blast na Héireann Awards, prestigious awards, the actual ceremony takes place down in Dingle and it celebrates the best of Irish food and drink. Now, that doesn't take place until October, but they have done the shortlist and 14, a record number of Donegal companies have been shortlisted, a range of categories. So there's Corky Even, Donegal Rapeseed Oil, Donegal Sea Salt, Filligan's Handmade Preserves, Green Pastures Donegal, Kinnegar Brewing, Kombucha Nadali, Little Mama's Gelato, Malo Mia, McConnell's Meats, Natural Dairies, O'Donnell's Bakery, the Ulster Mead Limited and Wild Fuchsia Bakehouse, of which we will hear more about later. So great to see so many Donegal companies doing well, and there's a Blast village down there. And I suppose one of the big things about this is the people who are taking part, you do get a big spin-off in terms of orders. It's great exposure. And it's
such an array of produce coming from Donegal. It's amazing to see.
And, you know, we really seem to be on an upward trend in that regard. And just worth picking out one of the company's Green Pastures in Convoy. Now, this is another award, the Great Taste Awards, all set up through the London Guild of Fine Foods. And there were more than 14,000 entries from 110 countries and a judging panel of industry experts. And the good news is that Green Pastures in Convoy, they were one of only five Irish companies that got three-star awards for a number of products: Greek yogurt, a fat soft cheese, a creme fraiche, and two types of sour cream. So great to see that. Yeah.
Wouldn't you love to be one of the judges? Taste and all
we'll
that.
Have to get onto the panel.
They need to list our
services.
We'll
need to investigate that. Good thinking.
And there is a number of digital grants available for people.
Yes, just to point out, with all the talk about tariffs and trying to find out exactly what's going on, if you are exporting to the United States, there is a Market Explorer grant you can get through the offices of the local enterprise office, and that's to assist people to evaluate and research new markets and to find out exactly how things are going on, taking into account the tariffs.
That was quite a quick response in relation to that, actually getting the grants up and going.
It's encouraging to see, and I think, you know, over time, as we know, these tariffs could fluctuate and change. So, but look, better to be on the ball and be in there and trying to find out as much as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And a business support clinic is being held.
Yeah, just to let people know, there's one on actually this Friday, and this is a virtual business support clinic. So all online, you can go through the local enterprise office, and if you want to find out more about the various supports and services there, so many small businesses have got that little helping hand, particularly in the early days, from the local enterprise office, and that is worth checking out. No, it's short notice, but they run them regularly. But the next one is on this Friday.
And it's great for particularly small businesses. You know, it's very daunting starting your own business, but there is so much support out there, and it's just knowing exactly where to get that support. So things like this are hugely beneficial to them.
Absolutely. And for example, one of the supports out there, there's a thing called the Grow Digital Voucher, and you can get up to 5,000 euro in funding for software, for training, digital tools, all about helping people getting online and promoting their business.
Yeah. So what have you got coming up on Business Matters this week?
Well, on this week's programme, I've been speaking to Shan McCann, the owner, founder, managing director and baker for the Wild Fuchsia Bakehouse in Dunfanaghy. Great success story this. She specialises in a variety of bread mixes and scone mixes. She's won a number of awards in the past, and stocking locally. Also, you can order online. She's had great taste award success in the past, and all dates back to well before COVID. And she was involved in a number of other businesses, which you'll hear about in the programme. And we've a clip here, and she's just explaining about the mixes, how easy they are to use. And that's one of the reasons why they are so popular. And they also make a great gift.
We try to make the mixes as easy as possible for people to make, and I try to give a lot of alternatives. So I don't like the idea of people having to go out and buy extra ingredients, and there's nothing more annoying than going to the fridge to make something and not having an egg or not having buttermilk. So I give alternatives. So all of the mixes you can make with plant alternatives. And, you know, if you don't have an egg for the wheaten bread, then you can use a teaspoonful of oil. So I try and put all of that in the back of the pack. We give really easy to follow instructions. I'm working on making little reels to help people, to show them how to make the mixes and things. But they're very straightforward. And for me, the key thing is that if you go to the effort and bother of making something, it has to taste good. Mm. And they do. They taste really good.
That sounds great for me.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible baker.
They come lovely 300 gram packs, very nicely packaged. And she makes them all individually. She's not a big batch and dividing it out. So she's total control over the quality, using the best of ingredients. And she makes them down there in Dunfanaghy. She's looking out over the Atlantic.
Lovely.
And, you know, loves her job. Great to see it. You can get them in the likes of Glenveagh National Park, and a lot of them, people use them as gifts, particularly, you know, it could be a Christmas, could be any time of year, and you can send them off. And she has a website as well. And so things like wheaten bread mix, soda bread mix, there's a Guinness bread, there's the scones, and what's in the news at the moment is that she's been selected by Aldi under the Grow with Aldi initiative. So they work with local suppliers, and it means from September the 11th, the Donegal-made Irish scone mix will be on the shelves in Aldi stores right across the country.
Brilliant. And I suppose the way she tailors the recipes, or gives you the information of how to tailor the recipe if you have an intolerance or allergy, that's massive. And I suppose, you know, that will increase the popularity of the product, because so many people have intolerances, or I know we're maybe more aware of it now.
And they're vegan friendly as well. She also has a very handy On the website, there's frequently asked questions and encourages people to contact her if they do have a query. And one of the beauties about some of the mixes, as she was explaining to me, is you can add in your own things. You could add in fennel, or you could add in poppy seeds, and you know, experiment a little bit to get your own
so
unique
version. So you can experiment
version.
And not ruin the entire batch.
And you know, already in about an hour, so once this program's over, you and me are going to go and experiment, and an hour later.
Yeah, I talk to Shannon all the time about my bacon. I am a disaster, really bad. So I will have to give it a go.
We'll have to get Anya and Karine to film the two of us making a batch. And
we can beat the world. I'd say you'd be better
than me, Chris. No.
So remind us again when Business Matters goes to air.
Yeah, so Business Matters is on Sundays after the 6 o'clock news on the radio, and the podcast will be... inside the next 20 minutes, it'll be available to download as well. And if you go onto the Highland Radio website, and you'll find the Business Matters section there as well.
Chris, thank you very much for that. That is Chris Ashmore, presenter of Business Matters. Thank you so much. And we're going to have a look at some of your comments now as well. Just actually, we'll give you a response. We were talking about the cycling earlier. We had Mervyn and Mary on the line, and they were raising concerns that they had received no prior notification to the race taking place. I think it was Saturday. So the organisers say, first of all, I'd like to thank everyone who reached out, whether with positive feedback or concerns about last weekend's Donegal Ultra Cycle event. We know that when we bring an event of this size onto the roads, it has an impact on local communities. The Donegal Ultra has been running for 10 years now, bringing cyclists from all over Ireland and beyond, and we work hard to make it as safe and respectful as possible for everyone, participants, residents and road users. We conduct a full risk assessment of the route, with Gardaí, and share information in advance through radio, social media and local networks to give people notice. I want to acknowledge the specific concerns raised, such as cyclists passing through livestock or vehicles and riders coming past at people's homes. We absolutely take those points seriously. We'll follow up to understand exactly what happened in these cases so we can address them in our planning for next year. Our aim has always been to showcase Donegal in a positive light while keeping disruption to a minimum. We're grateful to the communities who host us, and we welcome constructive feedback because it helps us improve. We'd encourage anyone with concerns to contact us directly so we can work together to find solutions. On behalf of the organising team, thank you again for your patience and support, and for helping us keep this event a safe and special part of Donegal's sporting calendar. And it is great to have such events, and it is good that people can air their concerns, and you know, the event organisers there say that they have been taken on board, so that is positive, and hopefully any concerns, they can be addressed, or there can be some measures in place that those that have raised concerns feel they've been listened to and that the concerns are possibly addressed. I fondly remember my days in the Gaeltacht, this listener says, with the Bon and Tea. She fed us three times a day and always made sure that we were looked after. We even got desserts in the evenings. That as Barbara Nicahal was saying there, €14.50 per night, I think, she said, that the Murty get. And to think that, you know, they're feeding these teenagers three times a day, you know, there's obviously electricity costs, and many will have mortgages and just the running costs of the house. And that definitely wouldn't cover, you know, all the costs that they have to put forward. But it's such a great, as I was saying when I was speaking to Barbara, it's such a great thing to do, I think. And I remember when I was at school, you know, a few students would have went to the Gaeltacht, but very, very few. But to see those figures, that 4,000 attended in Donegal last year, it's great to see such huge numbers that, you know, people want to learn the Irish language and want it retained.
Highland Radio weather updates with McElhinney's. Get back to school sorted with all the essentials from school jumpers to shoes. Visit our kidswear department in store or shop online at McElhinney's.com today.
Today's weather, very warm and humid. Scattered cloud will build through the afternoon and a few showers are possible in places later. Highest temperatures of 24 to 27 degrees. Now, the Teachers Union of Ireland is warning that the continuing teacher recruitment and retention crisis will see students miss out on subject options in the coming academic year. Joseph Higgins is executive member of the TUI in Donegal. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So, Joseph, this is nothing new, the concerns around, you know, the impact of the shortage of teachers. But what is it like on the ground there at the minute?
Well, if you take the bigger towns and cities, and that there is going to probably start encroaching into places like Letterkenny in the years to come, and in the very near future, I would imagine. You know, rents are increasing. To buy a house is becoming almost out of reach for many. It's extremely difficult. That's a cost of living crisis just in terms of getting a roof over your head. That doesn't include the basic bills. You know, you've rents now upwards of 1,000 to 2,000 a month, depending on where you are. And that's only the cost of living end of things. You could have teachers who, if they stay closer to home, will have long commutes to work. And ultimately, it'll lead to things like emigration. Like, there are other issues with this recruitment and retention crisis. We have conditions if you do get a job. Like 30 to 35% of teachers only get, you know, full hours. Mm-hmm. Only 30 to 35% of them. And the 12 to 13% of them, you know, only will get a CID first day out.
And that's
entry after
so
spent,
that's
after
simply on
a long time.
Yeah, unsustainable. Somebody puts themselves through college, it is an expense. You know, there doesn't seem to be any shortage of teachers out there, but it's the conditions that they're expected to adhere to. You know, nobody can really survive in this day and age. You highlighted there the cost of living crisis on, you know, those short term and part time contracts.
The short term part time contract creates instability, it creates unreliability. Teachers are, you know, a teacher's in a job, but they're constantly looking, at, you know, around for the next best option. And that's not good for schools. It's not good for students. And it makes parents pretty uneasy too, because many of the parents is going to say, oh, well, my child had three subs or had subs all year. And it's not fair in subs either, because they have no security of tenure. None whatsoever. Now, we have made a bit of an improvement on it where the two-year CID now has gone to 1 year. So once a competition has been held and the teacher gets a job, after 1 year, they get their CID. But to be like a teacher that has spent 3 years and maybe doing a degree or four and then another 2 years to do a PME at great cost, great cost, you know, they could be employed with a permanent contract right away. You know, if we want to keep our teachers, we have to look after them.
Yeah. And unfortunately, this has come to a point now where the fear is that students might miss out on some subject options this coming year.
Absolutely. Well, if you have a teacher maybe in some schools, depending on the size of the school, like sometimes reduced hours for teachers are not the fault of anybody. It's just maybe the size of the school. But you have a situation whereby if you've one art teacher, if you're one home ec teacher, you know, in certain subjects where you might be able to employ more than that, you lose them for one reason or another. They might not be readily replaceable because there just simply won't be the supply out there. Because teachers, like every other person in every other walk of life, has to look after themselves. They have to give themselves the best quality of life, you know, possible, which they deserve, no more so than in any other walk of life or any other profession.
And although the core subjects are, you know, obviously going to be taught, but these, like you mentioned, art, those subjects, they're crucial as well for the development of students.
Well, look, ironically, you know, I suppose if you're a math teacher, an Irish teacher, you're probably more likely to get employment because they are the core subjects and they're taught no matter what. Certain languages will also be sought after too. Sciences, you know, maybe to a lesser extent, though science is a very important subject and the various disciplines within science are needed. You know, if you won't be getting into engineering without a maths and science background. But all subjects now are probably going to be under pressure, you know, but the subjects where you have smaller cohort of teacher in the school, is the one that's not always readily replaceable. Technology subjects would be in that boat as well. You know, you have a massive attraction at the minute in construction. You know, a lot of individuals who have maybe potentially the qualifications to teach technology subjects, they might be happier. They might be more attractive money in construction. And what I found was, during, like, I'm 34 years at it now, the boom bust cycle, when we had people that had come from construction, whenever construction went into decline, back into teaching again. Now it was teachers' gain, and because construction had lost out. Mm-hmm. But we're now the opposite of that, and we still need our children to be taught. We still need teachers.
Yeah, and the TUI is to issue a briefing document to politicians. What is included in that? What is the top priority?
Well,
there's so many, I suppose.
It's a long, long list. A lot of the stuff that I've already said, you know, we want improved job security, which we are moving towards. The PME is still a thorny issue. Like, we have students that are paying huge amounts of money to do a PME. There's vested interests in that. Like, I suppose various colleges, they know that if a 2-year PME becomes 1 year, that their income stream is halved. You know, the PME, what was the HDIP, was increased to become a master's, but it also halved the number of teachers that came out. And that was okay during a period of economic, you know, regression and economic calamity, really, when there simply wasn't the jobs there and many were fighting for their existences, not just in teaching, but in everything else. But it didn't necessarily make it right. We definitely would be looking for greater levels of strategic planning. You know, we don't want boom-bust cycles where you have lots of money granted when there's a splurge, and then all of a sudden for it to be hauled back in. You know, you want something that, you want planning that is attainable, strategic, you know, and something that's going to last, not something that just where an announcement is made. We're looking at, I suppose down the line, we would look at greater supports for our teachers, you know, in the workplace. You know, the workload is increasing. The new senior cycle, which we have voted to accept, is still going to involve a lot of work. Like, it's going to be a huge workload in teachers with the, you know, the additional components. That especially because every subject will now have an additional component to it, an additional assessment component.
Yeah.
And even though it's going to be examined by the SEC, it's still a huge amount of work on top of CBAs that are already been done as part of junior cycle. So the workload isn't getting smaller.
Yeah, it's increasing all the
bigger.
Time.
And I would really, really like to see, you know, a progression in terms of promotional posts for teachers that maybe takes the toxicity out of it. Okay. You know, our workplaces, you know, like every other workplace, when it comes to promotions, can become toxic. And if you take that out of it, like, every teacher that goes into the profession is capable of doing, you know, any kind of a promotional post. And it's, you know, when it becomes free-for-alls, I don't think that builds a healthy working environment.
Do you see that then, Joseph, having a knock-on impact that teachers may leave the profession because of that?
Well, at the minute, it's not too bad in Donegal, maybe. But you see in areas, you know, some of our bigger cities, where it's not just a single factor of conditions, cost of living. It's an accumulative factor of all of these things together. And they kind of go, is this really worth it?
Yeah.
You know, we also, and another elephant in the room, I suppose, is, now this is, doesn't just affect teachers. After 2012, the pensions for new teachers were significantly disimproved as opposed to those pre-2012. And even though most young teachers, when you come out, you go, I just want to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't think on beyond that. And maybe it's not fair for them, but a lot of them are having to do that now because you're looking at a teacher that retires now, just say after the guts of 40 years service, you might only get a job in your mid-20s.
Mm.
You know, you're teaching a hell of a long time. You know, the pension could be as little as 12,000, 13,000 a year and the lump sum.
Yeah, and people just can't live off that.
Well, you're not going to live in 12,000 a year anyway.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Joseph Higgins, executive member of the TEI in Donegal, thank you so much for joining me this morning. And unfortunately, you know, we're always raising concerns and it just feels that, you know, maybe it is falling on deaf ears or it's more of a reactive than a proactive response to many of the issues that are being raised. That's all for the 9 till noon show this morning. My thanks to Carling Orr and to Shannon Wilkin for all the help this morning. John Brezen is coming up next on Around the Northwest and we'll be back tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock.